Professor Ivor Sarakinsky. He's professor at the Wits School of Governance. We've got him in studio with us to explain the commissions to us. And yeah, welcome.
No, thank you, and good morning, listeners.
Good morning. So these commissions, how many commissions are running at the moment?
There are two running at the moment, and previously there were three. One has finished its work, and that was the commission into the South African Revenue Service. So the two that are ongoing is the Zondo Commission into state capture, and the other one is the Public Investment
PRC.
The PRC investigation. That's chaired by the former Chief Justice of the Eastern Cape, whose name is Leximpati.
And what is that commission investigating?
That's investigating abuses of the Public Investment Corporation's funds, which is public service pensions, in terms of dubious lendings into failed enterprises and losing the public servants' pension fund billions of rand. So there's some real scandals there in terms of bad investments.
Okay, so the Zondo Commission... Sorry, Sal.
No. All good.
The Zondo Commission has come about because of Thuli Madonsela's State of Capture report. Is that correct?
She recommended that a commission be set up to investigate state capture, correct?
And that is what the Zondo Commission is?
Yes.
I just want to stop you there because I need to take you one step back. Okay. This idea of a commission,
yes.
This beast, this commission, as a body, as a legal, I don't know if it is a legal entity, where does it derive its authority? And what is its terms of reference? Who sets the terms of reference? Just give me a little bit of understanding.
What's the legal status?
Exactly. Give me a bit of understanding of what this commission is, because it's just a word on a piece of paper.
All governments around the world, and especially South African governments going back some time into history, have set up commissions to investigate matters, to get evidence in place to make recommendations on how government should act on a range of issues. So there's a Commissions Act in place which defines the powers of commissions, how they ought to be set up, how they ought to function, how they ought to be run. So there is a legal regulatory framework in place that's been used over a long period of time to set up and regulate how commissions function. And all Thuli Madonsela said is set up a special commission using the legislation in place to investigate state capture. The same process is being used to investigate the PRC and previously SARS.
Does that act that you spoke about a moment ago refer to the composition of the commissions, how they will be made up, who will be represented on them, et cetera, et cetera?
How they function. So the basic functioning in terms of who heads it has to be a high-ranking judicial officer, the secretariat in terms of managing the information, and evidence leaders. It's quite a process-driven...
So that's what I'm trying to get at is, can we as the general public have undoubted trust or confidence in the results of a commission's finding?
Yes.
So it's not biased or not representing anybody's agenda, I suppose. That's where I'm going.
You can only tell when the findings are made. But the process normally is extremely transparent. So you can sit in and you can offer to make evidence yourself as a citizen, and the processes are in public. And the findings are delivered to the president, who then reads them and makes them public shortly thereafter. So the process is as transparent as possible. The findings are absolutely transparent. And then how those findings feed into a policy process in terms of government action is also absolutely transparent, because that will come through Parliament in terms of further legislation or further processes on how to take the recommendations forward in terms of reforming institutions to address the problems identified.
Professor, one of the first commissions that we saw in the new democratic South Africa was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. If I look back at that, there were over 4,000 testimonies, and of the many, I can't remember the figures offhand, of people who were not granted, not clemency, what's it, immunity, they've never actually been taken to task. Is that one of the risks of a commission? Is that justice is not going to be done at some point? Well, because I feel like that about the TRC.
Yes. That's not the problem with a commission. The commission can't be held responsibility for other agencies that are supposed to act on the recommendations that the commission makes. And I agree, the TRC made wide-ranging recommendations that haven't been acted on in many instances. And that's because of decisions in the NPA and at other levels of government not to act on a number of wide-ranging and really important recommendations. The reasons are complicated, and I'm not sure we know all the reasons.
So corruption and change of leadership.
To do with that, so, I'm sure. Yeah. Can we just talk about this issue of recommendations for a moment? So is it recommendations only, or is there sort of binding legal effect to the findings?
No, it's recommendations. It's saying on the basis of evidence, I would recommend that you do A, B, C, D, E, F, G to ensure that justice prevails, actions taken against perpetrators, and you reform institutions to make it very difficult for anything like this ever to happen again. It's very hard for a commission to make legally binding recommendations because its process is advisory.
What are the advantages?
The advantages are,
as opposed to an investigation,
you have a detached, depoliticized investigation to generate evidence that's credible in order to advise decision makers on a way forward. So there are advantages of it. If you take it into a court case, what happens is people become defensive and adversarial, and that can limit the flow of information.
But with a court case, they would have got the evidence beforehand through forensics, through, you know, witness testimony. They would have got that all before,
yes,
before it goes to court.
But that's incredibly time-consuming and incredibly expensive in terms of expertise.
Oh.
And the process gets bogged down in terms of injunctions.
Yeah.
So you've got to get court orders, you've got to get warrants, and it goes to court in terms of appeals. And if you do it that way, it can take 5, 10, 15 years before you can generate that information.
Yeah.
So a commission is a kind of voluntary process that's guided by rules, and it does have some bite in terms of subpoena to get people to come and reveal what they know so that you can generate a finding that takes the process society forward in a speedier rather than an adversarial way.
If there's a will to do that, and if the ruling party isn't split down the middle with factions, then probably one could get a very significant result. But it could possibly be a lame duck due to the nature of the governing party.
Yeah, so in the context of Zondo, that is a big issue. But a lot of the information that has been generated is feeding into the investigations and the prosecutorial authorities that are being rebuilt and strengthened now. So very significant testimony has come out of that, which I'm sure the prosecutorial agencies are processing and gathering further evidence.
So it's going to become a court case anyway, could?
It will catalyze court cases.
Decide, yeah.
And I think that's the advantage of a commission. It's a quick release of information into the public domain, which then translates into evidence through further investigations, and it speeds up the process.
As a professor, you know, at the Wits School of Governance, I'm sure that you watch these commissions with a certain, with a heightened interest than what the layman would. What could South Africa have done differently? What could we have done differently? What structures of governance could we have had in place that would not have allowed state capture? Is there such a thing?
Yes, there's a lot that we could have done differently. The first point on this is the intelligence community wrote a report in the early days, 2007, 2008, I think, alerting government to the risk of the Guptas. And all the people who wrote that report were immediately removed from the intelligence services. And that was the beginning of cleaning out anyone who opposed
all the checks and balances,
the emerging Gupta power hold in government. So that was a real red flag when you when you remove intelligence officials, high-ranking intelligence officials, simply because they've written a report that you don't like. So we should have done things differently there. Those officials should have had the opportunity to push that evidence further in terms of getting government to do things differently. And it was clear then that state capture was already firmly in place for those people to be moved out.
Incredible, huh?
Prof, just back to Kathy's question. I mean, is there any mechanism one can build into the system to try and stop that, or is the only recourse that a citizen has at the ballot box every 4 years?
There's lots of recourse in addition to that. And this is what state capture is all about, is that you remove and you weaken institutions to prevent any of those accountability structures from functioning effectively. So I've mentioned the intelligence one, the scorpions, the changing of the scorpions, or should we say the downgrading of the scorpions into the hawks.
Yeah, they were far too effective.
That were permanently blindfolded. They had their eye.
Yeah, those little hawk caps.
The hawk caps on to stop them seeing. That was the whole purpose. So that was also in the late 2000s. So there you had, the destruction of investigative capacity that was tried and tested in doing these kinds of issues. They investigated Jackie Salibi and he went down. So
you're talking about the commissioner of police, but he was also the head of Interpol.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It wasn't just South Africa.
So when
Jackie
you've got,
Salibi.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, indeed.
Pull down the bigger.
Yeah. So when you've got capacitated, independent, politically insulated institutions, it works. And the whole point about state capture is to dilute that insulation so that you can get these institutions to function ineffectively and steer them in one way and avoid looking in the other direction. And that's the whole thing about the turmoil in leadership in the NPA, constant restructuring of the hawks. It's all an attempt to stop them doing the work that they were supposed to be doing. So a lot of learning there. We need to create and build, and hopefully this is happening, prosecutorial investigative bodies that are insulated from political interference. And if anything comes out of this, that might just be the long-term benefit of this whole process.
But everything has become political. I mean, just looking at, you know, our sector, communications. So As a radio station, we are not allowed to have any board members who are card-holding members of any political party, any woman's political party, any woman's driven party, any youth political parties, any advertising. There's a whole list. And then one looks at the SABC board, and it's all political agenda. Cognitive dissonance, but it's not. It's kind of like there's two double standards. Do you know what I mean? Like everything is politically driven. Okay, can we just go back to commissions for a second?
Don't touch me with my thing.
Don't throw a rabbit with a walk. All right, going back to commissions and just getting serious. Have there been any successful commissions?
Well, most of the commissions are successful at one level, in that they really interrogate information and they really put good information into the public domain with sound recommendations. So the criteria of success is not easy to determine, because they can't implement, they can't execute. That's not their function. It's not their mandate legally and politically. So whatever they say, whatever they find, needs to be carried through by other agencies. And that's where the failures come in terms of, for political reasons, leaders choosing not to implement recommendation A to Z, focusing on other things, ignoring, putting the information on a shelf so that it gathers dust. There's the Fonsell-Slubbert Commission, very good commission, investigating changing South Africa's national and provincial electoral process in terms of bringing constituencies back into the PR system in some way. Very important recommendations. That's been gathering dust for over 10 years now. So the commission's
good. So the short answer would be no.
The commissions are good. I think they do incredible work under very difficult circumstances. It's the failure of political heads to act upon them for a whole range of reasons.
And it's our failure. It's our failure as the citizens and the public of not being angry enough or mobilizing to do something about these results. They're out there. I mean, to me, what I'm hearing from you is the value of the commission is it puts it in the public domain. And once it's out there, it's out there. Then it's up to us to fight. Then it's up to us to say, you know what, NPA, if you've been captured, well, do something
about
it.
Here's a nice class action.
To be outrageous and, yeah, to be outraged and to say no. But I'm hearing, and I didn't know this at the beginning, that this is an absolutely vital tool in the armory of democracy in terms of ensuring that the information gets out there. Sorry, Kathy, just one more thing. What I am still struggling with a little bit is that even the decision from the get-go to appoint a commission is itself politically motivated, and that would be politically motivated by the strongest party. So I'm still struggling a little bit there in terms of, you know, if you don't have the power.
Yes. So commissions are a democratic instrument used by the majority party to investigate matters of relevant to the society as a whole.
Okay.
So it's absolutely a political instrument, but once it's established, the rules, the procedure, the law kicks in, and if you've got good office bearers in the commission, they will do their job professionally and impartially and generate extremely valuable information. And we've seen that with the TRC. That really is a remarkable commission. Much better than the equivalents in Chile and other countries.
So the failure was not that the TRC did not bring the information out to the public. The failure was doing something about it afterwards.
Absolutely.
No, I hear you loud and clear. Can we maybe just talk about cost? Because we did start this whole conversation saying, you know, are they worthwhile? Are they expensive?
They are expensive. Very expensive. You're talking
about more expensive than a court case.
Difficult to say. You're looking at a Chief Justice who's now spending full time on a commission instead of on the bench.
How much would he be paid on a regular basis?
I'm not sure of the salaries, but yeah. a Deputy Chief Justice is in the upper scale of public service salaries. You're talking about senior advocates in terms of the evidence processing. We know what advocates' rates are on an hourly basis.
Just remind us.
I wish I was earning that kind of money.
They're like 100,000 rand a day, aren't they?
It could go up to that in the high-end cases. You're talking of administrative secretariats to process, manage, photocopy, supply, email.
And who pays for all of this?
Taxpayers. So the commission
will
have a budget.
The tax that the government hasn't got enough on, so they've introduced sugar tax and, you know, asset. What's the? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well, appropriation bills.
So they're not cheap.
Go and jump on the trampoline for a little while.
They're not cheap. It's right. It's not. They're not cheap. To have a court case that goes over a 5-year period with people ducking and diving and bobbing and weaving, and playing legal technicalities to delay, can cost huge amounts of money as well. So it's a cost-benefit analysis, and what the commissions do is, in a steady way, make findings that shape public debate. And this comes back to the point Simon made earlier, that once it's in the public domain, citizens have a responsibility to ensure that the recommendations aren't shelved and ignored.
So the Zondo Commission will not, at the end of the day, come out with a recommendation saying, try XYZ because of ABC, that they will leave to the NPA to decide. Am I correct?
They'll phrase it differently. They'll evaluate all the evidence that's come through. And this is why former President Zuma is being so cagey, because he knows the heat's on. So a whole lot of people made allegations. Okay. Those allegations are in the process of being tested as we speak. What former President Zuma is trying to do is discredit those allegations without answering them. Now, Zondo is watching this, and he's going to have to make a judgment as to whether the denial is plausible or implausible. And if he decides that it's implausible, he's going to have to say, it seems as if the opportunity to respond to the allegation wasn't taken advantage of, and that suggests that further action and investigation needs to take place to see whether the allegations of ABC are credible and will stand up in a court of law. And that will be the legal speak, the commission speak, for saying, get a bunch of investigators on this case because there's something there that will stand up in a court of law.
Prof, I'm by no means any expert on the technicalities of commission, that's for sure, but there was a lot of criticism leveled at the Zondo Commission for having been constituted incorrectly in terms of powers that it has or doesn't have and powers to cross-examine and not cross-examine, et cetera, et cetera. What is your view on that, the current constitution of the Zondo Commission and its ability to make recommendations?
I think the claim that it doesn't have the power to cross-examine, to investigate and pursue arguments from people on the chair is incorrect.
Interesting.
I think that it does have the power to test claims made, and it does have the power to test answers made, especially if someone is there responding to allegations. I think it's quite clear from the Commission's mandate and the statement on how commissions work that it can pursue it further. And I think that the denial of that is part of this cat and mouse game that's being played by former President Zuma and his legal team.
So you do not feel that the Zondo Commission is having any sorts of existential crisis of legitimacy at the moment?
No.
You're confident that it's on track and performing as intended?
Yes. I think they're bending over backwards to keep former President Zuma in the process, because they want at the end to make findings that can't easily be dismissed as it was unfair and people had to walk out. So they've really bent over backwards. They've tried to keep him in the process, and in doing that, keep the legitimacy as high as possible. If he doesn't play ball and if he does throw his toys out the cot and walk out, which he might do later today, they have to be able to say, we tried our best to keep him in. And then the technical argument about how they did it correctly will come through to show that fairness prevailed. But at the moment, I think that the legitimacy of the commission is quite high.
Can you give me an example of a historical commission where it's actually made a major, major, major difference to the legislative environment, or action actually was taken?
There have been so many that it would be...
What stands out as sort of the single most successful commission?
In the 1970s, the Vian Commission on legalizing black trade unions is a good example of that.
Was that the last really successful commission?
No, it's not the last successful. I'm saying one stands out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In terms of a commission investigating labor relations independently of political influence.
And that is
getting the national party to swing away from like many, many years of deeply held prejudice and legal repression of trade unions to legalize and follow that commission illustrates the power that a good commission can have in shaping government policy.
And
the Zondo Commission is in that realm. The TRC was in that realm. The PIC one is in that realm. The SARS one was very good with Judge Nugent chairing that one.
Well, thank you for that, because that is an incredible example you've just given for a nationalist party to have agreed to legalize black trade unions. I mean, it's unthinkable. So there, you've just proved it. There goes the power of the commission.
Professor Sarakinski, thank you very, very much for coming in. And don't be a stranger. I mean, it's not your first time on Chai FM. I've definitely heard you a few times before. So thank you very, very much for coming in, for sharing your knowledge, your insight, and really appreciate it.
Real pleasure.